Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
You might remember last week on the programme we profiled the monarchies around Europe putting their faith in a new generation of princesses, many of whom are joining the military. And this week we're looking at the European monarchies trying to modernise without the benefit of that new generation of female talent. And we're joined once again by Associate Editor for Royal Central, Lydia Starbuck. Lydia, you're very welcome back to the programme. And listen, isn't it perfect that we're having this conversation of the day on the day of the King's speech, where we have all of that wild pageantry happening there at Westminster, all of that extraordinary protocol which is underway as we speak?
It is the perfect setting, and there's so much protocol going on. I'm struck every single time we have a state opening of Parliament, of all the things I either don't remember or that you learn, because there's almost 1,000 years of history going on, and it is spectacular to watch.
Now, we're going to start, though, in Denmark, and this is really interesting because this centres around an unwelcome-ish phone call because it happened on New Year's Eve. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, Denmark has a brand new monarch, but it was all a bit of a surprise. So for 52 years, Denmark was ruled by Queen Margrethe II. And she was, up until January the 14th this year, the last female ruler in Europe. But on New Year's Eve, that's when she does her festive speech. So that's when Denmark gathers around the TV. She surprised everybody and sat down and said, you know what, the time has come. She hadn't been well the previous year. She's in her 80s now, and she said that the time's come for a new generation. And in 2 weeks' time, she literally gave them 2 weeks' notice. I'm off, I'm abdicating. And she did. She signed the throne over to her elder son on January the 14th this year, which was the 52nd anniversary of her accession. So Denmark went from being a female-ruled country, and she'd been a real groundbreaking monarch, to having a brand new king.
So that was a huge story for you at Royal Central. But you reckon, do you, that the death of Britain's Queen Elizabeth, that might have had an impact on her departure, on the Danish departure?
I think so. Margaret was a huge fan of Elizabeth II. So bear in mind that when Margaret was born in 1940, she had no rights to the throne. In Scandinavia, although we think of them as really modern countries now, modern monarchies, for a long, long time, women were just barred from the throne. And Margaret was one of three girls. And her parents in the early 1950s, when no one else was even thinking about this, said, it won't stand. We want our daughter to inherit the throne. We're not going to pass it to an uncle or a cousin or some, you know, random male relative. And they fought quite hard for her to become heir to the throne. And she became a big fan of Elizabeth II because she became heir to the throne around the time that Elizabeth took the British throne. And she kind of followed her trajectory. And Margaret spoke very publicly and quite often about how much she admired Elizabeth II. And I really do think there was a moment when she stood in Westminster Abbey at the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II, and she was the most senior royal there outside of the UK. So she was in a prime position on the other side of the coffin, looking ahead at Charles III, the brand new king. I really think there was a moment there where she thought, you know what, actually, maybe there's a different way of passing it on. Her son is in his 50s and he's become king when he looks much younger. He's had 50 odd years as heir to the throne, but there's a different vibrancy around Denmark's royal family now that the throne has passed to a new generation.
Okay, so she might have said to herself, I don't want to leave this until my son is in his 70s, as Charles was.
Yeah, I mean, Margaret's not had great health. She had a really bad back problem in 2023 and she needed an operation, and she was away from public duty longer than we were told she would be at the very beginning. But I really think there was a moment in Westminster Abbey, she had her son Frederick at her side, where she thought, you know what, maybe we need to do it slightly differently. And some of the signs had been there already. Prior to that, she'd taken away the HRH from four of her grandkids. You know, that caused quite a row as well. And she was sort of saying, well, there's a new royal family coming, and my eldest son and his kids can be HRH, but the rest don't really need to be. And there seems to have been a bit of spade work going on prior to that. But I do think, seeing how the last year of the reign of Elizabeth II went, with so much speculation around her health and this kind of quasi-regency, that she felt maybe there's a different way to do this.
So how's the new generation getting on? King Frederick and his family?
Well, Frederick's having a great time. He's loving it. He's loving life right now. In the last couple of days, the Danish royal family have shared loads of videos on their social media. He's been out training with the Olympic athletes ahead of the games, and he's really, really good at all the sports. I don't know how well they edit these videos, but he seems to be doing very, very well at everything. But there's a different vibrancy around it. But the interesting thing about Frederick, he was heir to the throne for 52 years, but he's not got as much charisma as his mother or his wife. He married Mary Donaldson from Australia in 2004, and she's really, really popular in Denmark. And Mary is kind of the shining star of this new monarchy. It was really noticeable on the day he became king. It was a massive celebration. I mean, it went really, really well for Denmark's monarchy. If you were doing it just for PR, it was a big tick. Everything went according to plan. But Frederick came out, he was proclaimed king. Lots of cheering, but when Mary came out to join him on the balcony, that was the moment we got the big roar, and then even bigger for their eldest child, who is now heir to the throne, Christian. He's just turned 18. It was Mary and Christian that really seemed to capture public imagination, and Frederick was kind of there to facilitate it.
And Prince Christian is a bit of a Prince Charming, is he?
He's growing into a Prince Charming. I mean, he's very tall, he's very good looking, and a couple of months before Margaret surprised everyone with this abdication, he turned 18. So he got quite a big celebration. He got a big balcony appearance all by himself. There was a carriage procession, but they did this gala dinner for him as well. And the idea was that they were going to invite hundreds of people from around Denmark, young people, to put the focus on the younger generation and its relationship with the constitutional monarchy that's existed for over 1,000 years. But it became a bit of a popular event, and someone, they stage managed it brilliantly. They left their very glittery sandal on top of the stair in the palace with a photograph that they put on Instagram saying, "Will Cinderella find her prince?" And it went viral in Denmark. It was across all the papers, and the royal family even joined in.
So of course they did.
There's this kind of look to the future, and that all worked very, very well and made Christian into a bit of a heartthrob prince.
Okay, a bit of clever marketing there from the Danish royal family. So then the other royal family that people here will be so familiar with because of our links to Grace Kelly is the royal family of Monaco. So tell us, bring us up to speed, not with, you know, generations of them, but what's happening now and how popular are they?
Well, see, Monaco's one of those monarchies, it kind of punches above its weight a little bit in monarchical terms because it's a tiny country and it's a relatively newish royal family. It's been around for 300-400 years, but really it was always kind of just like a satellite of whoever was in charge of Spain or France. But of course, Grace Kelly changed everything. The Monaco royal family had kind of been on the up in the 19th century. You know, they built the bank at Monte Carlo and it got this reputation for being a sunny place for shady people, but it was Grace that turned it into kind of this superstar monarchy with her marriage to Renier in 1956. And the focus on her through her relatively short time as the sovereign princess, which died in 1982. So she was there for 25, 26 years, but it turned into one of the most famous monarchies in the world. And that kind of star power has remained attached to it. But the family, they have their own issues. They're quite colourful. They're quite interesting. And Grace's son, Albert, has been in charge since 2005, since the death of Renier. But probably what he's become best known for during that time is his personal life and his marriage to Charlene, who was called the runaway bride because she departed Monaco a couple of days before the wedding and then came back in very mysterious circumstances. And his kind of personal life continues to attract that attention. But The monarchy itself within Monaco, it's quite a small little family. And, it, you know, whether they can maintain that star power without the kind of immediate influence of Grace is questionable.
Well, we have, I would call it a minor obsession here in the office with Charlene and Albert and what happens. Because she, not only was she a runaway bride, she disappeared again in 2020 for about a year, wasn't it, when she went back to her native South Africa. She was a champion swimmer there. What was all that about? Do we know? Because we got tales of ear infections and, you know, funny reasons why she couldn't fly, but she was gone for 12 months.
She was. It was really, really mysterious. She went over there just as the kind of the pandemic was happening. And then we were told that she'd had this ear infection, which was linked to some kind of tooth infection. And they just kept saying she can't possibly get on a plane, which seemed really odd. I mean, obviously in 2020, there were all kinds of travel restrictions on top of that, but she was away, as you say, for a really, really long time. And what made it even stranger was she'd always been a really devoted mum. She's got twins born in December of 2014. So they were five when she went to South Africa, and she was away from her son and daughter for the best part of a year, which seemed, I think, to, you know, any parent, anyone watching, that's the oddest thing about it. She's obviously really close to her children. They mean a huge amount to her, and she means a huge amount to them. And yet they were separated physically for a year. And when she came back, she looked very thin, and she went away and she was being treated for undisclosed illnesses in France and outside of Monaco. It's never been touched on in great detail. And obviously royalty, like everyone else, has a right to privacy around their health. But it was a big question mark, and it kind of put Monaco in the spotlight again. And it's really only this year that Charlene has seemed like herself. I mean, she's been out and about a lot recently. She was an Olympic swimmer, so she's really into the Olympics. And we've seen her doing loads of stuff linked to the Olympics in the run-up. She looks really well, really happy. They seem to be getting on great, but it's taken a good 2 or 3 years to get to a situation where you're looking and thinking, yeah, they'll be fine for a few months.
Yeah, we'll be endlessly fascinated with what happens in Monaco. Last week, Lydia, we were discussing Norway. We didn't get into the detail of it, though, because the clock was against us. And I wanted to come back to that, because there's a changing of the guard there, too. They delayed the updating of the rules of succession for this generation. So take us through what's happening.
Well, Norway is really interesting because we kind of have in Norway the last of the passed over princesses. So the King and Queen of Norway, Harald and Sonja, have two children. Their daughter Martha is a couple of years older than their son Håkon. But when they came to change the laws of succession, they decided it wouldn't apply to this generation. It would just apply going forward. And Håkon and Martha were both teenagers at the time. And it was just said that Martha didn't feel that she wanted to do it. It was the right thing. And they would stick with the pattern. But going forward, there would be no difference between men and women. Whoever was born first would inherit. Martha has since gone on to become quite a colourful character in her own right. And it's kind of interesting that monarchies always find a way to survive, because Martha is heir to the throne. Her life would have been different. She wouldn't have had as many freedoms as she's got. But she'll be getting married for the second time in a few weeks' time in a hotel in a lovely part of Norway. I mean, it's a really nice hotel and it's a beautiful location. But her partner, he calls himself a shaman, and he's got into quite a lot of trouble for doing things like selling medallions online for 20 quid a go that he says can cure COVID. And there are a number of dubious situations around the two of them that have led the Norwegian royal family to say they remain much loved members of the family, a phrase we've heard from other royal families, but they will not be representing us in a royal way. So Martha lost a lot of her patronages. She doesn't use her title unless she's kind of walking through the royal palace on royal duty, and that doesn't happen very often at all. And she has this kind of private life that's very business centred, but with little royal elements. So ahead of the wedding, they've given themselves a monogram, Martha and her fiancé Durek, which is based on what they say is their previous life. They met in a previous life as Egyptian pharaohs. So Martha has her kind of own interesting background, but you kind of look at it with the benefit of hindsight and think, you know, all monarchies need to survive. It's a strange circumstance to have in the 21st century, really, isn't it? That being head of state passes down to someone just because they happen to be related to the person who's doing the job at the moment. But it has to survive. And maybe there was a wisdom in the decision to let the slightly duller brother take on the role in this generation to keep the survival going.
Yeah, it really is all about survival. And, you know, I think immediately of the glamorous slipper or sandal that you spoke about, and that image of, you know, Prince Christian searching for his Cinderella.
Princess.
It's those types of stories, though, that will keep the monarchy's alive. So we can probably expect to see more of that, the clever marketing.
Absolutely. And social media now is becoming such a vital tool for royal families. Even 10 years ago, most of them didn't have the social media presence you would expect, even from a big organisation. Spain's royal family, which we think of as really media friendly, didn't get Instagram until last month. And you presume most people with an image to maintain are on all these social media outlets. But what it does is it gives royal houses an opportunity in what is a really busy media environment to put their own story across. So they're not necessarily relying on traditional media to tell their story anymore. They can tell their own story, and that's going to be vital to them going forward, because we always hear all monarchies, you know, wherever they are in Europe, all constitutional monarchies, generally more popular with older people than with younger people. But of course, they need to keep recreating themselves, the new generations, to keep the support going that they need to survive. So things like putting a slipper at the top of the stairs and having the prince looking for his Cinderella, that does capture imagination. There is still something about the word prince or princess or king or queen that gets people dreaming and thinking of fairy tales. So capitalising on that, it's a useful thing for all monarchies.
Certainly is. Lydia, thank you so much once again. Lydia Starbuck there, who's Associate Editor with Royal Central. Now, Taoiseach Simon Harris travels to meet the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer today. We're going to hear about that and the King's Speech. That's next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.